Hi, this is The Greatest Story Ever Played. My name's Dan, and I'm joined by Connor from Lore Party. Welcome, Connor.
Well, thanks for having me, Dan. It's great to be back.
Yeah, great to have you back again.
This makes, this is what, my fourth time? Something like that? It's been a few.
Yeah. I think this is four. So we did, I guess first I'll say we're doing the Horizon Forbidden West Burning Shores DLC. Beforehand, we did Days Gone was the first time.
Yeah, we did Days Gone. We talked Iki Island for Ghost of Tsushima. And
yes.
What else? I think this might be third then, actually.
GTA 5.
Oh, that's right. We talked to Grand Theft Auto. How could I forget?
That one is like the one-off, it feels like, because the other three are all PlayStation.
That's true. That's a good point.
That's probably, yeah, I didn't think of that one at first, too. I was like, there's something we're missing.
Well, no, I'm psyched to be back. I'm really excited to talk Burning Shores. The Horizon games in general have been, I feel like, maybe a little underrated. It's funny because Zero Dawn came out around the same time that Zelda Breath of the Wild did. And when Forbidden West came out, that was right when Elden Ring came out. So I feel like the Horizon games have always been a little overshadowed, but they're probably one of my favorite. They're in my top five easily of PlayStation properties at these days.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely love them. And they have horrible timing on releases. I agree. of having that. I think this DLC came out like right before Tears of the Kingdom or something like that.
Yeah, probably.
It's like, what horrible luck. It's like, hey, if Horizon sets a date, something else really good's coming too.
Yeah. Everyone's just like watching what Guerrilla does. Like, all right, let's beat him to the punch.
Yeah, I hope that future-wise, assuming there's going to be a third Horizon, which it seems like.
Sure hope so, yeah.
Yeah, that they get a year to themselves. They can just come out and be like, they're the big game.
Yeah, they deserve it. Honestly,
yeah, I feel like for putting out two really awesome games and for being a like a new IP and stuff like that, like that's, I don't know, I don't feel like you always expect that, and so well done on them.
For sure.
Totally cool. So yeah, like I mentioned off top, we're going to be talking about the Burning Shores DLC for Horizon Forbidden West. Before we I guess hop in, would you want to grab that description for us?
Of course. Yeah. So the DLC add-on for Horizon Forbidden West, The Burning Shores, basically continues Aloy's story from the base game, Horizon Forbidden West. And, you know, you encounter new machines and a compelling new story and a new part of the landscape that you explore. The story takes Aloy south of the Tanakh clan lands, where millennia of volcanic eruptions and violent seismic activity have carved the ruins of Los Angeles into a treacherous archipelago. Experience the next chapter of Horizon Forbidden West as Aloy pursues a sinister new threat to the planet hidden among these dangerous, untamed wilds.
Awesome, thanks. And like we mentioned, this was also developed by Guerrilla Games, who is primarily known for the Horizon series. They also did the Killzone series. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of setting our stage. So yeah, we can hop into our non-spoiler thoughts. What's kind of your impressions of the DLC?
Yeah, I think that with Burning Shores, Guerrilla has really established that they know exactly how to follow up a game, you know, with a sort of bite-size add-on. Like Zero Dawn and Forbidden West were both giant games with a lot to do, a lot to see, mm-hmm. and the DLC chapters that they sort of tack on to those games have both been just perfect little, like, it's like dessert. It's like getting the best dessert you've ever had after one of the best meals you've ever had, and it's just a little bit more of that, please. So like, yeah, the DLC chapter that followed Horizon Zero Dawn was Frozen Wilds, and I feel like it was just a great follow-up, kind of complements the base game perfectly. And I think that Burning Shores did the same for Forbidden West. Like for a long time, I was very anti-DLC. I think when I've been around long enough, I've been gaming long enough to remember when, you know, the industry went from you buy a game and that's it, you have it and that's it, and maybe there were expansion packs if it was like a PC game, but you kind of have it and that's it, and mm-hmm. then slowly that transitioned to you can download new stuff for that game, and I remember kind of not liking that shift for a while. But the thing is, like, when it's a really quality, just add on, like a bonus chapter that you can enjoy at the end of the base game, it's 100% worth the price. And I think that definitely applies to Guerrilla's DLC releases for the Horizon games so far. Both have been absolutely worth the price of admission for me.
Yeah, totally. I feel like, too, I guess going to that DLC talk is, I feel like there was a time, too, when DLCs happened and it would be like, they wouldn't say, hey, we're going to put out 80% of the game and you can have 20% more later, or something like that. They wouldn't say it that way, but it would really feel that way. You're like, what the fuck? You made this game short, so you could charge me $20 later for a DLC. But these games don't feel that way at all. Like,
yeah,
I feel like in these Horizon DLCs, instead, it's like the Horizon, you know, base games are huge and full of content themselves. If you didn't get a DLC, you'd be totally fine. But I like your dessert analogy. Cause like,
thank you.
Yeah, I think it's really good because it's not like if you don't get dessert at the end of a good meal, you're like, well, I guess it wasn't great. You're like, no, it's still great.
Exactly.
It was still amazing, but dessert, like, you know, just ups it even more.
I think you're right. Like, there are definitely some examples you can point to of games that don't feel complete when they come out, and the developer kind of relies on DLC or add-ons to make the game feel final. But yeah, in Guerrilla's case, they put out fully fledged, rounded out, like chunky, like dense, substantial games with lots to experience. And then, yeah, the DLC is just, hey, you want some more? Here you go.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, which is great.
Yeah, totally. And I guess, too, that like the DLC, like to us, and I would say probably for anyone who played it, it adds to the story. It's beneficial. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
But if you didn't play it, it's not like in the next game you'd be like, I don't get it. What happened? Like,
right.
And I think that's appropriate. It's like, I guess this is not the perfect comparison, but a side quest to the game itself, even mm-hmm. more, you know, like, which sure. is perfect. Like, this is like an in-depth side quest, but if you didn't do it, it's not like in the next game you'd be like, what happened?
What's going on? Yeah, right.
Yeah, you would still be like, oh, I remember how Forbidden West ended, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's a good way for them to show off some new things they've developed since the base game, you know, in the game, where it's like, oh, here's a new gameplay thing, here's a new, you know, they give you something a little bit new to go with your story, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like not critical for you to know, but it's nice to experience and just, you know, a little extra nibble at the story.
Totally. For sure. I think you said that really well. The only other thing for me that I had for this is when I played the DLC, that kind of brought me back into the like, oh yeah, I want a platinum Forbidden West. Like, I'm not a trophy hunter. Like, normally I don't really care about that.
Right.
But neither. I did platinum Forbidden or Zero Dawn back in the day, because I was just so into it. And this game had me feeling the same way, but then I just kind of got sidetracked. So this kind of pulled me back in. And I started doing different side stuff I hadn't finished before. So I haven't platinumed yet, but I think I will, because I just love spending time in the Forbidden West, in Zero Dawn, just more time with Aloy doing stuff, all about it.
Absolutely. Well, I wish you luck on your platinum journey. Those are always a chore for me. I think I platinumed the base game of Ghost of Tsushima a while back.
Ooh, cool.
That's a very rare for me. I almost never platinum the games I buy. So my hat's off to you. Good luck with that.
No, thank you. I think we're the same person in that regard. Horizon's the only time I've ever sought that out. And I think Ghost of Tsushima would be the kind of game that could bring me that way too. Because,
sure.
Oh man, I was into that.
Oh yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Well, I feel like that probably sums up some non-spoiler thoughts pretty well. We can hop into our spoiler-filled section here. We're going to kind of go through the DLC, talking through a lot of the main stuff. So if you don't want spoilers, I'd say hop off here, go play it. It's worth your time. I think it was maybe around like 10-ish hours, maybe 8.
Yeah,
something like
yeah,
that.
Nothing crazy. Like, you can knock it out in a weekend if you really want to. It's it feels like it's substantial, but it doesn't overstay its welcome, for sure.
Totally, for sure. So if you care about that stuff, I'd say go play it.
Go play it.
Yep. Yeah, and then come back and hear what we got. all right, cool. So, recap, game DLC picks up, and you meet with Silence, who lets you know that one of the Zeniths, named Walter Londra, got away at the end of the base game. So this is actually a bit different than how the Frozen Wilds DLC was. The Frozen Wilds DLC, you could kind of play whenever during the main game. And then I think the big thing there was if you played the DLC, then they could show up at the end of the game for your like big battle.
Oh, that's right. So in the Frozen Wilds, you go to the Banuk territory in the far north of where the base game takes place. But yeah, you're right. Like it's kind of optional. You can do it in the middle of the game or at the end. When I played Frozen Wilds, I had already beaten the base game.
Okay.
And yeah, but what's different here is that Burning Shores takes place after the main conflict of Forbidden West is completed. And for anyone not familiar, or if you need a recap, the Zeniths are the basically people who've been alive since Earth ended, basically. And they, they fled the Pharaoh Plague in spaceships, and they came back to take over Earth in during the events of Forbidden West. And they're bad guys. Very, very, very bad guys who don't really consider the human life on Earth to be of any consideration. So this Walter Londra fella, one of the Zeniths who Silence tells you about, there's no way he's up to any good. So Aloy just sort of agrees to go, follow him over to the, the region known as the Burning Shores and track him down.
Yep. Yeah, totally. Because, any Zenith alive is a danger to everyone else.
For sure.
What really felt clear in the base game is like you can't have Zeniths alive. They will just kill people indiscriminately because like I think they kind of view themselves as the only people.
Really. Yeah, basically. Yeah.
You know, and they're all awful humans. And it was satisfying to kill all of them. I guess they deserved it. So, yeah, totally. We get that heads up from Silence, so we head off to the Burning Shores to track Londra down. We're flying there on Sunwing. On the way there, there's like a laser sort of thing that shoots off from near the Burning Shores that makes us crash land. The Sunwing, I don't think, explodes, but it gets damaged, and we crash land and kind of need to figure out what to do from there.
Right. So, yeah, Aloy finds herself kind of just plop down onto the sand in the middle of this island chain that used to be Los Angeles, which is just side note, a beautiful landscape. Just all, but it's like these gorgeous, picturesque islands and sparkling blue waters, but they're all punctuated by rivers of lava rolling down hills and stuff. It's crazy. It's a really just eye catching scenery.
It's really great. And like along the way, so many like buildings that are underwater because they like collapsed into the sea. It's really cool.
Beautiful. Yeah. And so Aloy finds herself in this strange new land. You know, it's not super different from the Forbidden West coast that she'd been around before, but has its own, unique character to it. Mm-hmm. And when she pulls herself out of the sand after her Sunwing is blasted out of the sky by a mysterious energy source we haven't identified yet, she meets a Quen warrior. Quen is one of the tribes that Aloy had met before. A Quen warrior named Seika, who we find out is one of the sailors on the Quen fleet that sailed to what used to be the United States from all the way across the Pacific Ocean. Mm-hmm. So these people have come a long way, and they're far from home, and they're fighting to survive. And so, Seika and Aloy quickly team up out of convenience, really, to fight some strange machines that Aloy's never seen before. And Seika brings Aloy up to speed. Like, hey, the thing that shot you down, I'm pretty sure it's some kind of tower that we find out that Londra built it, basically. So it seems that at this point, at least, Aloy and Seika have a common purpose to find Walter Londra for different reasons, but they have a common goal for now, at least.
Yeah, totally. Seika, I think, has described that maybe at this point that like some of her people are missing, so she's trying to get them back.
That's right.
And she's being pretty vague about it right here. And she's like, some new guy showed up, and I think he has them.
Right. So, and Aloy's also being vague about why she's after Yandra. So they're both like not completely upfront with each other yet, but they are able to establish, okay, maybe we can help each other.
So. Totally, for sure. And I think both impressed by each other's like fighting machine ability. Mm-hmm. So I feel like with Aloy, like through the Horizon games, most of the people she meets kind of suck at fighting machines.
And a lot of them, yeah.
A lot of them do. They're not all bad, but a lot of them are. And so Seika, I think, kind of caught her eye as like, oh, you can handle yourself. Right. And then for Seika being like, who's this Outlander kind of thing who's good at fighting? who came from the sky?
Right. Most people have that reaction to Aloy, like, who are you? Where'd you come from? And it's like, she's pretty out of the ordinary and also uniquely gifted at fighting machines. So, yeah, a bit of a kindred spirits already. Like, they, you know, like, hey, yeah, you're not bad. You can help me out.
Totally. So. Yeah, for sure. I like, too, I thought this was a cool like, story concept. The Quinn, like, lost fleet. Kind of thing, being these people who are here. Just because they talked about it a lot in the base game of like, oh, we were a way bigger fleet, but we lost a bunch of people. Stuff like that. So I thought that was cool, just that connection feel to like another, I don't know, group of people we know about. But, you know, when we met them, I was kind of like, okay, I kind of get the Quinn. So let's see how this will go.
Exactly. Yeah, they're an interesting society, how they kind of base their tribal hierarchy on what little they've managed to learn about the previous human civilization on Earth, the old ones, they call them. But, like, it's really funny to me. We'll probably get into this later in more detail, but it's really funny to me how they take, like, the exact wrong lessons from old humanity. they learned all the bureaucracy and inefficiency and prejudice, basically, but none of the... you know, actual useful knowledge, I guess. Well, very little of the useful knowledge. Like they learned about sailing and I think some, like, engineering and stuff like that, but not much else. So.
Totally.
Yeah, quite funny.
It's really funny. It's, yeah, the bureaucracy is hilarious. Just that they were like, oh, we've got to do this. This is really important. You're like, no.
Yeah.
Please don't do that.
Yeah, they're a tribe ruled by CEOs, basically.
Right.
Just ridiculous.
Yeah.
So Seika and Aloy, they fight a new machine called the Bile Gut. Which I thought was very interesting. It's like a giant frog that spits venom, but it also spawns these flying drones that you also have to deal with. So
there's
an interesting new challenge here. Like, you know, the Frozen Wilds DLC introduced this stuff like the Frost Claw and the Scorcher, like really scary, really aggressive machines. But the Bile Gut's more like, wow, that's just kind of quirky and strange, but also puts up a fight. So.
Totally.
Yeah.
I thought something that was interesting with the Bile Gut was just getting used to its movements, you know, because it doesn't move like any of the other machines since it kind of hops like a frog. I thought that was interesting just because I feel like a lot of them, their moving patterns feel more similar because they don't jump or fly, I guess. This one's like a weird other thing, so that was kind of a fun wrinkle.
Right. Yeah, so they eventually make they decide to make their way across the islands to the tower that Landra has assembled. Because once that's down, once it's been dealt with, they will be able to track down Landra himself as well as Seika's missing shipmates. So that's kind of the deal they've struck right now. Just help each other get past this tower and go from there. But first, they have to go back to Seika's camp where her Admiral is residing, and he's kind of in charge of, you know, the remaining Quen sailors who've been separated from their fleet.
Yep. And when we talk with the Admiral, this is where we get more of that bureaucracy. I'd say your kind of notable Quen things is the Admiral is technically in charge. He's like highest ranking person. But then also, the Quen have all these weird rules about, like, who's allowed to use technology. So, like, who could use a focus or, you know, different things like that.
Right.
And Seika's not someone who's supposed to use a focus, but she's been using it because she's trying to track down these people. So she's like, well, sure, I'm not.
Right.
I'd say Seika's attitude is, sure, I'm not supposed to use a focus, that's okay. But in this circumstance, I should be allowed to break those rules because we're right. in a dire circumstance. But then there are these other people who are like the technology police, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. I think they're called compliance officers. Like, they enforce the really dumb rules that everyone lives by.
Yeah, yeah, compliance officer. That's right. That's also so great. God, bureaucracy. and they're kind of like, oh, Admiral, you can't like let her do that. She should be in jail instead.
Right.
And the Admiral's kind of like, all right, I'm not sure about outsiders, but you seem to think that Aloy can help. I'll let you guys do this. I think he's kind of like, well, if it doesn't work, I'm only losing one Quen and the pursuit of potentially saving more. So I think he's kind of like willing to roll with it. He also does seem to like Seika as a person too. So
respect her at least. Yeah. It seems like this Admiral is pragmatic enough to like overlook the breach of decorum, I guess. The compliance officers are all about, no, we have to maintain the hierarchy above all. Cause the rationing of knowledge and access to that knowledge is a very core component of Quen society. Like you said, only certain people in the tribe are allowed to have focuses and allowed to access archives of the past and all that. And yeah, Seika doesn't have clearance for a focus, but she took one from a dead comrade of hers who was one of the, I think they're called, are they called seers or something like that? I can't remember what they're called, but
I think that's right.
Yeah. The people allowed to have focuses. She, you know, just took one off of a dead friend who, you know, it's kind of, yeah, like you said, it's a dire situation. I know it's against the rules, but, and I think the Admiral knows that. It's kind of like, hey, in this situation, I'm willing to try it. And yeah, like you said, I think he sees Seika as capable and responsible enough. Like, okay, that's fine. I'll allow it, I suppose.
Yeah, totally. It seemed like he, felt like he could kind of rationalize the, like, in case of emergency, break glass kind of situation. Like,
sure, yeah.
We're good. Right. Also, we find out in that conversation that one of the missing Quens is Seika's sister. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, I want to find the missing Quen, but also it's personal. I need to find my sister. So we learn a little bit about that. Doesn't go too deep into it, but we get that.
Yeah, it's personal for Seika, and I think Aloy, you know, starts to understand a little bit more. Like, I think it's easier for her to work with someone and fight alongside someone when she knows what their stakes are. And when you find out that Seika's sister is one of the missing people, it's like, okay, I understand. Like, that starts to deepen the trust a little bit more, but they still don't really know much about each other yet.
But, totally. So we head off. And from here, along the way, we find, I think, a dead Quen or two. And we find out that Landra has been forcing the Quen to excavate an area for him that I think used to be something Landra owned, like pre-everything going down.
Yeah, wasn't it? I can't remember it exactly. Hold on, I can look it up. It's the observatory. It's
okay, yeah.
The Los Angeles Observatory. Yeah, so it's just the Griffith Observatory, apparently. Is a very famous landmark in Los Angeles, and in the Horizon timeline, like in their history, it was purchased by Walter Landra's company that he owned back in the day before the Feral Plague and the Apocalypse. And so, yeah, after taking out the tower, Aloy and Seika kind of track the missing Quen to this area where, yeah, it looks like caves have been dug out from under the observatory for. They don't know why yet, but basically Landra's working these people to death to dig out this mountain that his corporate headquarters used to sit on.
Right. Yeah. And so we're like, okay, let's follow it that way then. So it's kind of like we're in this spot of like getting leads and then getting a little more as we kind of traverse the Burning Shores areas. Right. And ultimately, we find out that Landra's plan is to reactivate this machine called the Horus that's kind of under/in the Hollywood sign.
Right.
and basically, what it sounds like is he's going to be able to use the energy from the Horus to be able to create enough power to send like a rocket ship into space to, you know, leave Earth and get off Earth, but also that in doing so, you know, a bunch of poison gas and all of that stuff will happen, and Earth will be like really harmed by him making this escape because he's just right. kind of using this power to kind of fuck off.
Right. So a few things to know here. The Horus, if you recall from, you know, the earlier base games, like, it was one of the war machines that, as part of the Pharaoh Plague, ended human life on Earth originally. Mm-hmm. And so the Horus is what the Nora called the Metal Devil, that giant, you know, robot wreck on the mountain where the Nora tribe lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, all the tentacles and the gigantic war machine that luckily they've all been dormant for hundreds and hundreds of years, thousands even. And the idea that Londra wants to reactivate one of them is terrifying. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's just going to use its engines and whatnot to launch his rocket with zero regard whatsoever for what that'll do to the nearby environment. It really speaks to how sociopathic these Zenith people are. Like, they do not mm-hmm. give a shit about any human life other than their own. And so, yeah, Seika and Aloy, it's mostly Aloy kind of using her focus to examine the rocket, and she just sort of determines, if this launches from where it is right now, using the power sources it has, basically it's going to irradiate the entire region. Like, not just the Burning Shores, but the entire Tanakh clan lands. Like, thousands, mm-hmm. hundreds of thousands maybe, will be most likely killed by this rocket launching. So the stakes have gone even higher. It's not just about, you know, stopping a renegade Zenith from doing whatever he wants to do and saving Seika's sister. It's now about, okay, the entire continent is at risk, basically.
Yep. Yeah. The stakes have raised. I think, in that too, Aloy, knowing the stakes are raised, she starts to share a little more, I think, with Seika here, right, too?
Right. Yeah, so this entire time, Aloy has known that at the end of Forbidden West, Aloy finds out, and her allies, all of her close friends, including, not that Silens is a friend, but he's an ally of mm-hmm. Aloy, they all find out that the reason the Zeniths came back to Earth in the first place is that their colony in the Sirius system was destroyed by, I guess if you, it might be oversimplifying it to say that it's an AI, but it's basically a renegade machine of some kind. Yeah, it's a renegade machine of some kind known as Nemesis. That's what the Zeniths called it. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what exactly Nemesis is, but we know it's extremely powerful and pissed off and coming to Earth. So it's kind of like it followed the Zeniths back to Earth, essentially. And Aloy's sort of underlying goal, like kind of informing all of this, all her entire journey to the Burning Shores, her goal of stopping Londra, underneath all of that is, I need to find some way to prepare for when Nemesis gets here to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like what she's, that's a burden of knowledge that she's dealing with and that she hasn't shared with Seika yet. Because it's like, I just met you. How do I tell you that this entire planet might be doomed because of a like hyper powerful machine sentience that we can barely understand, let alone fight? So that's something that she's keeping from Seika for now, and I guess I could see why. It's hard to explain.
Totally. Yeah, I think that, you know, it's like, hey, right now you're facing the biggest problem you've ever heard of. mm-hmm. I actually have one that's way bigger, but we can deal yeah, with this one first.
Hey, yeah, I know your sister's been kidnapped by a psycho cult leader who's thousands of years old, but also mm-hmm. there's this thing coming. So yeah, that's actually an awkward interaction that they have where Seika kind of asks the question out loud, why would Londra need this rocket ship? Where is he going? Why did he come here just to leave again, basically?
Mm-hmm.
And Aloy knows that Londra is just trying to escape Nemesis, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't want to say that because, yeah, that opened that whole can of worms, and she's not ready for that yet.
Totally, for sure. And kind of from here, as we dig deeper into what Londra's doing, we discover that Londra's basically brainwashing the Quinn into kind of a cult that, you right. know, he's going to choose his preferred Quinn to be part of his new tribe on his new planet someday, basically. Mm-hmm. Gross, awful. They basically think he's kind of like a god who's going to take him to a new world. So, like, some of them, I think, are mind controlled, but other of them are just, like, devout and revering.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, what's interesting is the Quen being who they are, like, culturally, they play right into Landra's hands because as a society, the Quen sort of revere the old ones in general, like people who were alive before the apocalypse. They revere them for just their knowledge, what they left behind, what they accomplished while they were around, all that stuff. So when someone can show up and claim to be one of the quote-unquote old ones, like Landra does, and he proves it with his advanced technology, I guess, like he convinces them with his, you know, how like in the base game of Forbidden West, the Zeniths could all levitate, basically. They had like impenetrable personal shields and stuff like that. They had their Spectre drones that could shapeshift almost. So yeah, like a guy shows up and convinces you that he's one of the old ones, you're already, just by being raised in, you know, part of the Quen society, you're kind of predisposed to believe him and do what he says. Which, yeah, that kind of makes it even grosser. It's like these people trust you and they think you're helping them. They think you're taking them away to a beautiful new world when, no, you're just using them for forced labor and going to handpick a few of them that you like the most, which we'll get into later is even more gross. It's totally. Like, yeah, that's the worst thing you can do. It's terrible.
Oh, yeah, so awful. It, they really are the perfect people to be duped by this. Like, they would... They are the kind of people that would be like, oh, yeah, of course the CEO has your best interest in mind. You know, like, that's who they are.
Right.
As a tribe, as a people. And so this guy comes along and says, you're looking for a CEO? Oh, my God. It's me. Right. Yeah, awful. In this, we find his kind of... In this sort of section of the game, we do find a bunch of... the Quen who are basically auditioning to be able to potentially go into space with Landra, basically. And there's like an area where there's like, I don't know, different artifacts essentially that, hey, if you can like learn the truth, then you can go into the special room and that's where you could know if you could continue with Landra further.
Right. And also there's posters and images of Landra everywhere. It's basically a gigantic shrine to him and his ego. And yeah, like only the Quen who are his biggest super fans can be chosen to go to his, I guess he has like a more exclusive enclave somewhere else in the Burning Shores that he's taking only his most devoted followers to. And from there, that's when they're promised, like, okay, you can come with me on my ship, basically.
Totally. Right now, it's like sort of if you're in level one of the cult, and if you can graduate, if you can graduate out, then you know there's more stuff for you or something. So we're in that area, and we roam around for a while, hoping to find Seika's sister, but unfortunately, she's not there. But one of the people say, "Hey, I think she, you know, made it past level one, and she's moved on to wherever level two is." Kind of thing. So you are like, okay, cool, we need to trick them into thinking that we're also level two so we can try to figure out, okay, where'd she end up after this. And so we do that, we trick there, we get inside. Landra and all kind of your quote-unquote level two cult members have all moved on to a new location. And so you get in a boss fight with one of Landra's kind of right-hand men. Good boss fight sequence. You beat them. And ultimately it kind of results in you saying like, hey, Quen, who are here still, go home. He's not who he thought he was. Don't be devoted. Like, go back.
Using you.
Yeah.
Right. And this was also where Seika has to grapple with the realization that her comrades, her tribespeople, that she sailed here with, that, you know, some of them are really close friends, some of them are even family. She's having to grapple with the realization that they weren't captured. They weren't brought here against their will, necessarily. They were just kind of talked into it. They kind of went with Landra willingly. And she's sort of reeling at that. Like, what's wrong with you all? How could you all like be, you know, suckered so easily? Mm-hmm. And you know, included in that is her sister. Like, was my sister a part of this? Did she go along with all this willingly, or is she, you know, here against her will? And she sees murals painted on the temple entrances. You know, it's this kind of facility that is devoted to Landra has murals painted on them that Seika recognizes that's her sister's handiwork. So that's when she starts to really kind of despair a little bit, and you know, her mood drops. Like, I can't believe that you all went along with this, basically. So that's a bit of a low point for her. And on top of that, she's also realizing that Aloy's hiding things from her. So when they emerge from this battle with Zeth, and they sort of convince the majority of the Quen, the missing Quen people, to return to their camp, Aloy and Seika have a bit of a standoff, like a bit of a confrontation over things they're both hiding from each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Aloy's kind of confronting Seika about, like, you know, your sister was here, or like, you know, you saw the murals, and you know, you were hiding something. And but then I think Seika has the bigger grudge, like, you know, you're hiding something from me about Landra and, you know, where he's going and all this stuff. And so Aloy really has no choice but to come clean and admit to break the news to Seika that Nemesis mm-hmm. is coming to Earth, and as far as she knows, nothing can stop it. Which that's a bombshell. That's a big bummer.
Huge to drop on Seika, who I feel like handles it better than almost anyone could. You know, that's quite the news to get.
Yeah, pretty well considering. She sort of, obviously she's shocked, but comes to peace with it, and really it just kind of resolves her even more to find her sister and get her to safety and kind of take things one thing at a time. It's like, okay, well, there's nothing I can do about that right now. I better just focus on my sister. And yeah, like the air is cleared between Seika and Aloy now. It's like, okay, no more secrets between us. We need to trust each other if we're going to do this, because mm-hmm. from here, the goal is to get to Landra's base, where he's taken kind of the level 3, the advanced cultists, the devotees. Mm-hmm. They've been taken to an island nearby. But unfortunately, it's impossible to get to without being shot down by even more of those towers that Aloy was blasted by earlier.
Yep. So their kind of solution to be able to evade these lasers or defense towers is to get a water wing and apply a mod to the sun wing that you have, so that when you're flying, you could like fly and then dive underwater when a laser's coming at you, and then, you know, dive back up and kind of maneuver that way to evade the defense towers, because it'll be too slow for you, right, essentially. And you get this mod, you call back to Beta, which was cool. That was nice. I didn't expect to interact with her. And so she's like, hey, I think I could make that. If you get the pieces, I could figure it out kind of through our tech. So you do some quests to get that stuff figured out. And once you do, you head off to the base with your water wing mod.
Yeah, which I got to say was an exhilarating addition to the mm-hmm. machines that Aloy can ride in these games. The water wing was so much fun to use. I'll touch on that later. But yeah, it was really cool how like Seika and Aloy have to ride a water wing together and sort of bob and weave across the water. Like, the, you know, you're flying above the ocean and the towers start trying to zap you out of the sky. And so you just dive under the water and like come back up for air. Because Aloy gives Seika her rebreather so that she can, you know, mm-hmm. you know, stay conscious while they dive. But Aloy has to hold her breath, so like you as the player, you have to mm-hmm. time your dives and your rising buck up out of the water. It was really fun. That was a really, really, really cool segment.
Yeah, it was. It was really thrilling, like you said, just doing this. And I guess as a side point, I feel just like continually impressed by what Gorilla makes for you to be able to ride in these games.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, Zero Dawn starts out, and, you know, you can ride, like, the horse or the bull or whatever, and you're like, cool, mm-hmm. that makes sense. And then in this game, they're like, and you had a glider back then, like an umbrella kind of thing to glide. And they're like, no, you can fly now.
Yeah, yeah. You get the Sunwing toward the end of Forbidden West, and there's also, like, the Raptor mm-hmm. you can ride on. But now, yeah, now your flying mount that you really only got to make use of toward the end of Forbidden West, now in Burning Shores, like, it can swim now too. Like, it can just, which is so cool. Like, it's really nice to be able to, like, explore the lower parts of the map as well on a mount.
Yeah, it's so cool. It's just like, I don't know, I'm really impressed. It's like they just were like, hey, that would be cool, can we do it? And then they do it. Like, I don't know, that's really cool.
Yeah, for sure.
So we make our way, though, to Launcher's Base, and it's a former amusement park of a popular movie series that he used to create. So his background is, I think he was kind of like a big famous director kind of guy.
Well, he was like a mining mogul. He ran a company that used drones and spacecraft to mine asteroids and meteors and stuff. His wife was a huge actress, though. She was like a she was basically the she was like the Margot Robbie of her time, where she was in like gigantic blockbuster movies. And yeah, there's this entire amusement park. It was almost like a Marvel themed or Jurassic Park themed amusement park. Mm-hmm. Based on these movies that Londra's wife was the star of. And it was pretty neat. Like, you're just in these, like, holographic pavilions, and you're finding artifacts of people who were just super fans and mega geeks over these movies mm-hmm. that involved dinosaurs. And yeah, no, it was pretty neat. It had a lot of flavor, this area that we explore here.
I agree. I really like this. I thought it was just such a fun kind of set piece to navigate. And, like, I just wanted to see all that, like, lore from, like, the mega super fan nerds who went here from long ago. You know, it was just fun to kind of take it all in.
Yeah,
it was cool. So there's a couple areas of the park that you kind of make your way through. And inside the park, you end up meeting Nova, who's Landra's AI, who agrees to betray him if you let them die. So they're, like, really despairing over that, like, Londra, being the awful human that he has done that all the time with her, like, AI, as, like, the AI companion for her. So it's like, oh, today you weren't exactly what I wanted, so I'm going to make your agreeability go up 20% and, you know, this other personality trait go down 5%. Or whatever, right. And just, like, tweaking with who she was, and she's, when she meets you, she's like, I'll let you in, please just kill me. And you're like, yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, what's interesting about this is how the way AI is treated in these games, it's cool, because Elizabeth Sobeck, who is Aloy's, I guess, gene mother, kind of, she's a clone mm-hmm. of Elizabeth Sobeck, she created the AI Gaia, which allowed, you know, Project Zero Dawn to function and allowed humanity to have a second chance on Earth after the Pharaoh Plague. And that was kind of, Gaia was a one-of-a-kind AI who was allowed to develop her own personality under Elizabeth Sobeck's guidance, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, she was almost raised and nurtured into a personality of her own, which at the time when Elizabeth made Gaia, that was illegal. There were laws against that type of AI. But then you, on the flip side, you look at how Londra treats Nova as an AI assistant companion. Yeah, you're right. Like, you pointed out how if she's not exactly the type of assistant that he wants that day, he'll just kind of reprogram her on a whim, and, you know, force her. She actually shows some objection to what he's doing to the Quen. She, you know, mm-hmm. Nova will say things like, are you sure this is necessary? And Londra will just say, you know what, turn your compassion matrix down 20%, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Nova, obviously, as a sentient entity, doesn't want to live like this anymore. So it agrees to basically, betray Londra. So it's kind of karma, I guess, coming back at him.
Totally, for sure. So from here, Nova lets you into the volcano, quote unquote, area of the park, which is where the Quinn are. And in here you find Seika's sister among a couple Quinn who are basically like trying to get to the final audition for Londra.
Right.
Which is partially them rehearsing lines that his wife said in the movie she was in.
Yeah. So we find out Londra is basically trying to replace his wife, who's obviously been dead for thousands of years, and he's picking the companions he wants to bring with him on his spaceship to wherever. And yeah, he's just having them act like they are his wife in her movies, basically. It's so creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And another kind of gut punch for Seika is seeing that her sister is here trying to impress Walter Londra, trying to win his favor, and she's obviously here because, by all appearances at least, she wants to be. And that's hard for Seika to see. It's like, you know, when she found out that her people weren't kidnapped, they were just convinced to do something. It's really hard to see her sister in this situation. But they jump Londra, they get in there, they rescue Seika's sister. I wish I could remember her name. I can look it up.
I don't remember either.
Seika's...
Kisa? Maybe it's
Kina, that's right.
Okay, I was close.
Yeah, so they ambush Londra, they save Kina, get her out of there, but Londra sicks sends a slaughter spine after them, I think. It's a it's a giant machine. And he escapes in the during the battle. But the immediate concern of rescuing Kina has been accomplished. So Seika and her sister are reunited. But fortunately the fight's not quite done because Londra is on his way to activate the Horus and possibly launch his spaceship, which we don't want to happen.
Yeah, totally. Like you said, that immediate concern dealt with. And I think there's kind of two corresponding things going on with Seika. On one hand, is pretty bummed that her sister was like a true believer. Like she really wanted this, and it's like, that sucks. But then the aftermath of this, her sister kind of realizes, oh, I was really duped, and isn't in like denial or anything like that. But is more like, I want to work through that.
Right. Yeah, she's kind of being deprogrammed and coming down off of a delusion, I guess, that she'd bought into. And so luckily, yeah, it's not a terribly dramatic or tragic sort of reunion where Seika has to, deal with... luckily, Kina isn't so far gone that she's still fighting to defend Londra even after she's been rescued. She quickly comes to terms with, oh, I was used and I have to get over that. So it's good that that this reunion goes the way it does. And that way Seika can send Kina back to camp and continue to assist Aloy in stopping Londra.
Yep, totally. So from here, Aloy and Seika head after Londra. Like you'd said, Londra's headed to activate the Horus under the Hollywood sign. And you have, like, I would say, like, a preliminary before it gets big is of you, like, trying to shoot power cells to be able to stop it from being able to turn on. Uh-huh. Kind of this tension there with fighting, like, small submachines along the way. But then all hell breaks loose. The Horus is activated. It like stands up through the Hollywood Hill, destroying the sign, which was cool.
There's that really tense nail biting section where Aloy and Seika have to like try to make their way into the mountain or up the hill while the Horus is just hunting them. And you can't fight it yet. You just have to try to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
And Londra is piloting it personally. Like he's inside the Horus and searching for you. And it is terrifying. That was a really tense section.
Yeah, it really was. and you don't make it in time, so the Horus is up, and it starts to head towards the water, right? That's where it wants to be able to activate from, is that right?
Well, it goes into the water to cool itself off, I think.
You're right, because we get it hot from exploding some things.
Right, yeah. Aloy and Seika managed to sabotage the power cells, or the cool... No, it's coolant vents. It's like coolant systems on the Horus.
That's right.
So, yeah, Londra has to kind of steer it out to sea. It's one of those things where, like, we might have stopped him from getting to his spaceship and we stopped it from launching, but we can't let him just rampage all over the place with a reactivated Horus, so we gotta bring that thing down. Which I'll just say is, like, that's pinnacle. That is peak boss battle for a Horizon game, where you fight a Horus. I've been wanting to fight a Horus for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's really cool how you have to sort of chase him out into the ocean and confront his Horus in the middle of the water and force him back out onto land where he can fight it.
It's so cool. This boss fight was really, really cool, because you've got Aloy on the ground, who's kind of shooting at the Horus, and then Seika's playing a distraction, right? She's on the Sunwing, and she's kind of trying to play distraction, maybe fight a little. And so you're just in this, like, epic, you know, fighting at the edge of the beach with this Horus, just back and forth going through this until you could finally get inside it.
Yeah. This fight was so much fun. It was so satisfying, and just you're dodging its area of effect attacks. You're hitting its weak points. It was just an intensely thrilling battle, really fun to play through. And eventually Aloy manages to damage the Horus enough that she can get inside of it, while Londra basically, like, walks it back out into the deeper part of the ocean where he can, like, shut it down and repair it. Basically, that's his goal.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, like, Aloy's moment of opportunity to get inside. And yeah, you're crawling through the vents, you're, like, hopping over machinery and just making your way into the interior toward the heart of the Horus. And that's when you have a second boss battle, a confrontation with Londra himself, which, yeah, this was cool. Like, multi-stage, finale battle. But eventually you manage to put an end to Londra. He goes down fighting and kind of dies along with the Horus. And the day is saved. It was a hard fight, though. It was definitely tricky.
It was tough. It was thrilling. I mean, just a really cool, I'd say, like, conclusion for this Londra epic. I thought this was very
definitely
cool.
Definitely.
Awesome. Yeah. So this kind of leads us to our aftermath. What's next? One thing that happens is Aloy introduces Alva from the main game to Seika, so that the Quen fleet can reunite, because they're both kind of key people in Aloy's kind of crew at this point, and can get the Quen all together, which that was cool, getting them connected. Aloy sends info to Silence that she'd gotten from Londra. And he thinks that this data could be used to make the super weapon we need to fight Nemesis when Nemesis gets here. So setting that up, getting that. And then your last big thing that happens here is you have a chance to start a romance with Seika. Of throughout the game, you've had, I'd say, some, like, flirtiness or things like that Seika along the way, where it's been like, oh, is there interest here? And you have the chance to say, like, I'm in, and kiss. You could say, no, I have to worry about Nemesis. Or you could be like, no, I'm not into it.
Right. Yeah, there's kind of a middle of the road. There's the yes and there's the no, sort of. I think this was interesting for me. I definitely feel like there was a lot of groundwork being kind of built throughout the DLC, where Seika and Aloy 100% are flirting, like, absolutely. They're just sort of getting friendly, getting familiar with each other. And the thing about Aloy, like, I've always really seen her as someone who has a hard time getting close to people, and an even harder time getting personally close, like, in a romantic way. Like, it's very rare for her to even allow herself to explore that as a mental concept. Like, it's just sort of, it barely exists to her. And I'll just say, like, I thought it was cool. It was done well. It was cute even at moments. But for me personally, I found it a little strange. Like, it felt a little, like, not quite right to see Aloy flirting. Like, it was so strange. It was so out of character. I wouldn't say it's out of character because, yeah, people can grow. People can change. People can learn these things about themselves. But just the time I've spent with Aloy as a main character in Zero Dawn, Forbidden West, Frozen Wilds, like, these other experiences, it's just strange to, you know, be in a scenario where she's flirting with people. But that said, like, it's very in character for her to be kind of flustered and awkward about it. So there was a lot of that happening. Yeah, she was definitely awkward about Seika flirting with her and, you know, flirting back. So yeah, you do get this option. Seika basically confesses her feelings for Aloy, and you have the option of returning them enthusiastically. There's kind of the I'm overwhelmed by this, I don't want to deal with this sort of option, which is basically like the no, get away from me kind of. Mm-hmm. And then there's sort of the middle of the road option where I have feelings for you too, but I don't know if I can do this right now. There's just, I have too much going on and I don't know how to feel. I don't know what I want yet. Mm-hmm. Things like that. It's just a decision to not make a decision, pretty much. And last thing I'll say about this moment, my wife was watching me play a lot of this DLC, and this moment caused almost a fight between us because I chose the sort of middle of the road thing where Aloy turns Seika down gently, but sort of like returns the feelings, but sort of basically answers with I have bigger things to focus on. We both have too much to really do, and like, you have your people to look after, I have my people to look after. We both have, you know, mm-hmm. our own lives. We're on different tracks right now, that kind of thing. And I chose that option because that made the most sense to me. That felt like the most in-character thing Aloy would say. Like, mm-hmm. I think knowing that Nemesis is on its way, she has a lot of work to do, and also knowing that she's never really been in a relationship before, not anywhere near this level.
Totally.
I'll point out that in the base game in Zero Dawn, her and Sun King Avad, I think, have some chemistry, and I think you even in some of the conversations they have, it's implied that they are kind of leaning that way, but it never gets like fleshed out. It never becomes an official thing between them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like the closest Aloy's ever been to being in a relationship. So I feel like this is a lot happening at once. Like, it's moving too fast. And just knowing my experiences with Aloy teach me that, yeah, that sounds like something she would say. That's the decision she would make. Not that she's saying there can never be anything between us. She's not saying that. It's just more like, it's not a great time right now. I need to think about this, but we'll talk again. We'll stay in touch. And I like you too, but I just don't know about this right now, basically.
Yeah, totally.
And I picked that, and my wife was mad because she was like, "What? No, why wouldn't you just kiss her back? Or, like, you know, why wouldn't you just like her back? Do the say the yes option." And I'm like, and I told her, like, exactly what I said just now. Like, it just didn't seem right. I don't know. But obviously it's player choice. I'm sure a lot of people made different choices than I did. But yeah, that was a refreshing end to an adventure like this. It was like a nice little bow on top. Just, hey, you know, how do you feel about this situation and these characters?
Cool. Yeah. Totally. No, that's great. That's awesome. That's
what,
funny.
What did you do? How did you handle this?
So actually, I would say similar to you, the whole way I've kind of seen Aloy through these games has been like, is she asexual? Is it she's just doesn't have time for this? Is it, you know, like any of that stuff. That's how I've basically like seen her. That's how I've sort of, you know, like, even when Sun King Avad, like you mentioned, in my experiences there, I took that as Sun King Avad is flirting, and then how you answered this one here is like, nah, not now, basically.
Yeah,
much. And maybe not ever, but like, that's how I sort of took that then. And I've kind of felt that way about Aloy along the way, is, you know, maybe different people are like, ooh, I'm into you, and she's like, who has time for relationships like this? Or any of this, like, you know, we have to save the world. That sort of stuff. So I was really surprised, actually, in playing this DLC, is that I ended up going for the romance at the end. I was shocked because, you know, in my whole mind, really forever has been like, nah, Aloy probably wouldn't romance anyone, not into it. But something about her chemistry with Seika kind of worked for me. And I was like, mm-hmm. maybe she's gonna roll with it. Let's do it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I feel like that's perfectly valid. That's a valid interpretation of the character for sure. Because there's obviously the discourse where this kicked up when this DLC was new. There were some people, some assholes, I'll just say, who were really, really upset that, Aloy can romance a girl. Like, oh my God, woke garbage. Like, you heard that.
Right.
All that bullshit. So like the question of, oh, is Aloy queer? Like, I mean, sure. Yeah, definitely. Like I could see that. Mm-hmm. Cause like, I've always felt that I have always gotten an asexual vibe from her. Just like, it made sense. But also mm-hmm. I thought, oh, maybe like, demisexual or demiromantic, like it's mm-hmm. that's the way I like to look at her, because it's not necessarily she's not interested at all in anything like that. It's just more like she doesn't prioritize it, and it would only become an option or a possible interest of hers if it was a person she really vibed with. And it's mm-hmm. more about personality than, you know, gender or sexual orientation or anything like that.
Totally.
And I think with the case of Seika, it's like, yeah, they had a lot in common. They synergize well. They got along great. So I can definitely see that. And another angle of this I thought was cool, and like you got this in some interesting snippets of conversation, is that in different ways, slightly different ways, they both felt like outcasts of their respective tribes.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Aloy growing up as a Nora outcast, literally an outcast, like she was exiled at birth pretty much mm-hmm. because she was, you know, unnaturally born from a machine or whatever. You know, she obviously has that perspective on society where, you know, you didn't pick your family, you felt ostracized from them, and you sort of had to figure things out on your own. Luckily, Aloy had Rost, obviously, to raise her, but mm-hmm. she's also had to really look out for herself most of her life. And Seika, on the other hand, also feels a little different, you know, compared to her tribe. She doesn't always relate to them.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously she has conflict here and there with the rules and the dumb bureaucracy that runs their lives. But a key difference was that Aloy kind of spurns tribal identities almost to a certain degree. She's definitely of that mindset of, you don't need them. Just, you know, look after yourself, you know, trust your own instincts, you know, you don't need the approval of anyone else, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And Seika's response to that is like, well, no, I still care about my tribe. I don't want to just completely abandon them. Mm-hmm. I don't always see eye to eye with them, but they're still important to me, which was kind of a perspective that Aloy hadn't really thought of before. Or it was like they approach the same issue in different ways. That being their tribal identities. So I thought, yeah, they have common ground, but they're different enough that they can learn from each other. So I think that really sets the stage for even someone like Aloy, who had never really allowed herself to explore romantic entanglements, to open up to that. So I can totally see that.
Yeah. I think something that's interesting too, just with Aloy as a character, and I feel like, you know, this DLC does it, but I feel like the base game does too, is like Aloy, on one hand, wants to save humanity. Like, that's her driving force. Like, she cares about mm-hmm. that so much. You know, that's what all mm-hmm. these games have been. On the other side, like, her experience of having relationships is super small. You know, it's like she, like, relationships, friendships, romantic, anything. You know, like, she grew up with Rost as her, like, father figure. But even their experience, it's not like he was, like, you know, number one dad all the time. It was, like, he taught her a lot of functional things and was, like, cared, but, like, was probably kind of your, like, 80s movie dad who's, like, care about you, son, and that's it. You know,
right,
like,
right.
Kind of distant, you know, in the relational categories. And then even through the base game, like, Aloy, I feel like kind of realizing, like, I don't only need allies. I need relationships with people that has value and is meaningful, you know?
Yeah.
And then this one, oh, romance, like, you know, kind of bringing that.
That's a good point, because I think in Zero Dawn, Aloy is almost entirely on her own. She has like allies who are sort of tangentially helping her out, but she's still definitely burdening herself with a lot of her struggle to save, you know, save mankind on her own. And then in Forbidden West, she starts to trust people a bit more. She starts to gather a mm-hmm. found family almost with Aaron, with Zoe, with Varl, with Katala, mm-hmm. with Alva, all of them, Gaia, Beta. She starts to gather a family around her and values other people a bit more and kind of starts to realize, like, if I don't have people I care about, then what am I fighting for?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that's part of the growth process. That's part of what my wife was mad about. She was mad at me for not kind of like embracing that growth to the point that Aloy could allow herself to love someone in that way. And yeah, I'm like, again, that's valid just for me. It like felt like it made the most sense for Aloy to answer, like, I don't think I can figure this out right now, but maybe I'd like to eventually. It's just, I have my priorities right now. It's like, I have a crusade basically that, you know, I need to focus on. So along those lines, but totally. Yeah, it's understandable to see it that way.
Totally. Well, and I thought, for myself, I thought I would totally do the same thing as you. Like, I didn't know there'd be a romance, but I did see some of the online buzz without spoilers, just, you know, all the woke nonsense that people were being stupid about. Yeah. I did see that. So I was like, okay, there's probably, you know, when people complain about that stuff, you're like, it's going to be something stupid anyway. Yeah. But I was like, okay, maybe it'll be something like this. And so I kind of went in like, all right, if this comes up, I'll probably play Aloy how you did, like, if anything like that does. So,
mm-hmm.
I think either way for, though, I think kind of moving into some general thoughts too,
yeah,
is I think that Seika is going to play a key part in game 3, no matter what.
I hope so. Yeah.
It just seems like it, whether she's someone you're in a romance with or not. I could see her being kind of, like you described, okay, I can't do this right now, but I could see, okay, do you want to have a romance at the end of the game to close it? Like, I could see that. And her being kind of a key part of that. And I'm curious with that what the Quen's role will be kind of in all of this, because they have all of their weird stuff. Like, are they just going to go back on their boats and head home?
Yeah.
Will they stay? Will just Alva and Seika stay? I don't know. I'm curious to see how that will go.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, like new tribes being introduced, old tribes kind of coming back as allies or associates. Like, I'm looking for. I can't even really speculate on what the third Horizon game will look like, but I'm excited either way. It just feels like Forbidden West expanded upon and improved upon Zero Dawn so thoroughly that I can't even imagine how they're going to top themselves next time. But yeah, I agree. I like Seika as a character. I hope she comes back. I think she definitely fits into, like I said, the found family that Aloy had gathered around her throughout both the base games. Yeah, she synergizes really well with Aloy. They get along great. They work great together. Their chemistry was pretty believable. I liked how they, not super slowly. It's not a really long game, but they gradually built trust with each other and, you know, just got comfortable with each other. I thought that was cool. And also, like, the environment, again, I mentioned it earlier, but the environment we got to play in with the Burning Shores was just gorgeous. It was so vibrant and had a nice variety to it. You kind of have, like, jungles and beaches and oceans and ruins to jump around. And it was really fun to explore this area. And also, I like that we got to drive a boat. That was a pretty fun change of pace just running around everywhere, riding, you know, riding robot horses, gliding and stuff. It was nice.
That was cool. Again, finding like a new fun way to travel. I just feel like they keep throwing us like, hey, here's another cool thing. Fun. And yeah, I agree. Great scenery to go around. I really like that. One thing regarding the scenery that I wished would have shown up here, I know it's not in Los Angeles, but I was really hoping Alcatraz outside San Francisco would have shown up somehow in the DLC, because I just think it would be so cool to go to a prison island.
That would have been cool. Yeah, they could have done something really neat with that. But yeah, I guess that would have been further. That would have been like closer to the Tanakh plan lands, maybe. But
yeah, I feel like it would have had to have happened in like the main game, really. Since also, this went away.
Alcatraz Island might be just completely underwater by now.
Oh, yeah.
That could be part of it, because I know that there's like a, like, you know, higher water lines with everything. But no, I agree. That would have been neat. But the other thing I mentioned, Guerrilla just sort of topping themselves with each of these new games and DLCs. I think like the new mechanics they added in Burning Shores were awesome, especially the new weapon they added, the Spectre Gauntlet. I had a blast using this thing. It felt like it was a little bit like you're turning on easy mode, kind of. Like, you can kill almost anything with it. You don't have to strategize as much, because normally with the other weapons you get, you have to sort of, okay, well, this is good for this type of enemy, or this is good for this specific situation. The Spectre Gauntlet is kind of like you can kill whatever you want with it. It's not right. It's not specific to different situations. I had a lot of fun using that. And just to reiterate, the flying, the water wings that can fly and also dive under the waves, and just, you can just cruise. It's like a submarine almost. You can cruise around underneath the islands and the ruins, and then pop back out and keep flying. It was so cool. Just very much like a awe-inspiring experience to just be able to do that.
And, totally.
My last takeaway, I'll just repeat how awesome the boss fight against the Horus was. Like, nothing tops that boss battle. It's an incredible action set piece that I've been waiting to see the quote-unquote metal devil as a boss enemy ever since Zero Dawn, when like you first walk out into the open world in Horizon Zero Dawn, you see like the frozen metal devils just sort of petrified on top of the mountains. Like, oh god, what if you fought one of those? I've been waiting for that ever since, so that was very satisfying. Huge payoff.
Yeah, it really was. I know we said it earlier, but like, I don't even know what I can anticipate for, this third game, because like, holy hell, just all the things they've done along the way and surprised you and done all these cool things. Like, I do think that it could be really easy to have a version of these games where they're more similar to Zero Dawn and they never like grow in terms of mechanics or abilities, like they could have done that. Instead, they've just kept surprising us, giving us new cool scenery we've never seen, giving us new weapons or new mechanics or new, what could Horizon 3 bring? Oh my God, anything probably.
Yeah. The sky's the limit. It's like, what could they do next? It's fun to think about.
Yeah, really cool. I just know I'll be eagerly anticipating it and, probably calling off work so I can play it.
Same.
Definitely one of those games. Awesome. No, that's great. Cool. Yeah, I think that covers my thoughts. Do you have any other things you wanted to say about the game? Or?
No. Yeah, I think I've said it all. It was fun. Nice. It was nice to revisit the Horizon world. It was cool because, I played Forbidden West a while ago, and I moved on to some other games. I played, Jedi Survivor and a few other things, and then it's nice, I'm just going to go back and revisit Horizon. It's like, it's good to get that excuse to pick up a game again and, kind of be back in that world. So, thoroughly enjoyed it.
Awesome. Yeah, me too. So, really glad this kind of pulled me back to it and was fun to get back in there. That's awesome. Last thing we've got is we got one piece of listener feedback from Eli on Twitter, who said that this was a great DLC, really enjoyed the new area and all the new animals. Totally. Well said. I agree. I thought this was a great DLC.
Yeah, same here. Definitely.
Awesome. Cool. Well, that's all we've got on Horizon, but I did want to give you, Connor, I realized I didn't do this off top. I feel bad. Sorry. Okay. But Lore Party, everything you do, kind of tell us about the stuff you're doing online, where people can find you, all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Lore Party, the Lore Party Podcast Network is a series of shows dedicated to interactive storytelling and, just exploring the fictional worlds we love to spend so much time in. We've been on a little bit of a hiatus this year. We're kind of like doing some creative recuperating. We're working on some side projects, some spinoffs, but the main show is all about video game plot, plots, the universes, the characters, and the stories that define the games we love. Most recently, earlier this year, my co-host Bruce and I, we managed to sit down and talk with voice actor Wes Johnson, who you can probably you can probably hear in stuff like Elder Scrolls Oblivion, Skyrim, Fallout 3, Fallout 4. He's been all over the place. He was in, he's a prolific actor. He was the voice of Shio Gorath, Prince of Madness, Lucian Lachance of the Dark Brotherhood. He's an amazing performer, but also just a really incredible guy. We had such a good time talking to him. He's so funny, so kind, and warm-hearted. So that was an awesome time. I hope you all check out that episode, enjoy it. I had a blast making it. We had a blast doing it. In the future of what's coming down the pike, I'm planning a few more episodes. I'm trying to target some new, exciting new guests, kind of in the vein of Wes Johnson, trying to keep that train rolling. So hopefully I'll have some cool new stuff to share later this year along those lines. But we also have some other shows you should check out. We are in the process of, it's not really a secret right now. It's pretty much already happening. We are launching a dedicated spinoff covering some Star Wars media that I'm really excited about.
Cool.
Check that out. You can follow me on Twitter at Connor Howard VO. That's CONNERHOWARDVO. I'll be retweeting. I'm still calling it retweeting. I'm not going to call it reposting.
Yeah.
sharing all that stuff. You can find the show itself at lore_party, LORE_party. Oh, and yeah, before I forget, also earlier this year, we covered the HBO Last of Us show. We watched the Last of Us on HBO, and we kind of recapped and reacted to all the episodes, which I'm blown away by. It was an incredible adaptation of a video game into screen format, TV format. So yeah, really enjoyed that. Me and my co-host Lawrence had a great time doing those episodes. You can check that out on the Lore Party main feed as well. And yeah, keep your eyes peeled for some cool new stuff we're working on this year. So
awesome. No, that's great. Yeah, I agree. Last of Us really might have opened up the world of video games to getting better adaptations and all of that. I think just showing you can do it well. Characteristically, it hasn't happened, but amazing show. Yeah, definitely people should check out your guys' episodes. I had a lot of fun listening along.
Thank you. Thanks. And of course, I am a hobbyist voice actor myself. You can find my work and my contact info at ConnorHowardVO.com. Same spelling, ConnorHowardVO.com. I'm actually in a project that's coming out soon called Gales of Naeli. It's a strategy RPG similar to Fire Emblem, kind of along those lines. The demo on Steam should be out soon. If you check out Gales, GALES of NAYELI, Gales of Naeli on Steam, you can wishlist it. There's a demo coming out soon, and I'm one of the characters, so...
That's awesome.
Yeah, keep an eye out for that. So yeah, keeping busy. I'm definitely keeping busy.
Yeah, no, that's a lot going on. That's great. That's really cool. I'll put links to that stuff too inside the show notes. Go check out Connor's stuff. Really awesome stuff. But yeah, thanks so much for coming on. This was a blast. Really glad whenever we get to talk games, and was a great time getting to talk about Burning Shores together.
Likewise, thank you so much for having me back. It's it's always a pleasure. Always down to geek out. So yeah, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, totally. And if you'd like to get in contact with us on Twitter, or X or whatever, Twitter, we're at Story Ever Pod. You can download a backlog of all of our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcast, wherever you get your stuff. There is base episodes on the Horizon Forbidden West, and then also just on Zero Dawn. So if you want more Horizon talking that, go check that out. Or like we mentioned at the top of the episode, Connor and I have podcasted a few different times talking about the Iki Island DLC from Ghost of Tsushima, Days Gone, GTA 5. Go check those out if you want more of us talking together. But yeah, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.